Welcome to the Utica Phoenix Deep Dive.
Great to be here.
Today, we're plunging into a really crucial discussion here in New York State, the ongoing debate surrounding our criminal discovery laws.
That's right. It's something that keeps coming up.
We're going to explore what these laws actually are, why they were changed not too long ago, and look at the, very different perspectives on how they're working out now.
Exactly. And you shared some really insightful resources. We've got the Legal Aid Society's take.
Defending the current laws.
Then there's the Manhattan Institute, raising some serious concerns.
Right, quite a different view.
And also a report from the New York City Bar Association, which adds, you know, more analysis and context.
Absolutely. And understanding how our justice system works, how laws like these get debated, get implemented, that's just fundamental to democracy, isn't it?
It really is.
So our goal today is to kind of unpack these different sources, pull out the key points, and give everyone listening a clearer picture of this legal debate and, you know, what it means for public safety and fairness in the state. Okay, let's dive in. What exactly is discovery in the legal world? Like, the basics.
Okay, so discovery, in essence, it's the formal process before a trial where prosecutors have to legally hand over relevant information and evidence they have against a defendant.
To the defense attorney.
Exactly, to the defense. It's really a cornerstone of a fair trial.
Okay.
I mean, think about it. If you don't know the evidence against you, how can you possibly understand the case or make informed decisions about your defense?
Or even whether to take a plea bargain, I imagine.
Precisely. It sort of levels the playing field, you know?
Makes sense. You can't really defend against the unknown. And before 2019, New York had different rules for this. Article 240.
That's right. Criminal procedure law, Article 240.
And what was the feeling about those older rules? Were they working?
Well, the general consensus among reformers was not really adequate. The argument was that they didn't really ensure prosecutors met their obligations consistently. And the big concern was this lack of transparency could, you know, pressure defendants, maybe even innocent ones, into taking plea deals just because they didn't have the full picture of the evidence or the lack of evidence sometimes.
Right. It could feel tilted against the accused from the start.
That was the argument. Yeah.
Okay. So that sets the stage for the changes. Then came 2019, the reforms often called Cayley's Law, bringing in CPL 245. What were the big shifts there?
Right. CPL 245, it took effect January 2020, and it was a major expansion of what prosecutors have to disclose, and crucially, it sped up the timeline for doing it.
And Cayley's Law, that name is significant.
Very. It refers directly to Cayley Browder. The NYC Bar Association report really drives this home. He spent 3 years pre-trial at Rikers for allegedly stealing a backpack.
3 years, just awaiting trial.
Yes, unable to make bail. And a key factor was he didn't have access to the evidence against him. He tragically died by suicide after his release.
Wow, that really puts a human face on why this matters. So what kind of things must prosecutors automatically hand over now under 245?
It's a pretty long list aimed at much more openness. Things like names and contact info for potential witnesses.
Okay.
All statements from witnesses, and that explicitly includes police officers' statements.
Right.
Any electronic recordings, think 911 calls, body cam footage, what's called Brady material, which is any evidence that might actually help the defendant point towards innocence.
Exculpatory evidence.
Exactly. Search warrants and the applications for them, expert witness materials, forensic test results. It's much, much broader than before.
And the timing changed dramatically too, right?
Right.
Not just what, but when.
Precisely. The initial law said, boom, 15 days after arraignment for that first batch of discovery.
That's fast.
Very fast. It got tweaked slightly later, depending on custody status. So now it's 20 calendar days if the defendant's detained, 35 days if they're out.
And that's different from, say, the federal system.
Yeah, quite different. Federal and other states, like Texas, often tie discovery more to the trial date, not so much upfront, right after arraignment.
And a really key part of this seems to be the certificate of compliance. How does that work? Why is it a big deal?
Ah, yes. That's the enforcement mechanism, really. Under 245, prosecutors can't just declare they're ready for trial anymore.
Which stops the speedy trial clock, right?
Exactly. That's the crucial part. They can't stop that clock until they file this formal certificate of compliance with the court.
So it's basically them saying, yes, we've done our discovery homework.
That's it. It directly ties moving the case forward to meeting these discovery rules.
Okay, so that's the what of the reforms. Now let's get into the why all the debate. we have these very contrasting views from the Legal Aid Society and the Manhattan Institute. Let's start with the arguments for the reforms, drawing from Legal Aid and the NYC Bar. Legal Aid seems like a really strong defender of the current law.
Oh, absolutely. Their position is quite forceful. They directly accuse Governor Hochul of misleading New Yorkers and distorting the facts about the law's impact.
Strong words.
Very. Their main point is that cases aren't just being tossed out over, you know, some minor paperwork slip up. They highlight that the state's highest court said the standard isn't a perfect prosecutor, it's a diligent one.
Implying that small unintentional errors shouldn't sink a case.
That's their interpretation, yes. Diligence is the key.
And they have a specific take on why dismissal rates might look different in NYC versus elsewhere.
They do. This is central to their argument. They claim higher dismissal rates in the city are largely down to what they call NYPD intransigence.
Meaning the police department not cooperating.
Specifically in sharing evidence with prosecutors, especially for less serious misdemeanor type cases. They say DAs report police officers just not responding to requests for info, not returning calls, not identifying evidence quickly enough.
That's a serious allegation.
Yeah.
And Legal Aid mentioned a possible legislative fix for that.
Yeah, they point out that lawmakers apparently at the DA's request actually introduced a bill to give prosecutors direct access to NYPD evidence databases.
To bypass the alleged logjam.
Right. The aim was to let prosecutors get the evidence themselves. Legal Aid is critical of the governor for not backing that and instead trying to, in their view, weaken the discovery law itself.
What about those headlines we see sometimes, thousands of domestic violence cases dismissed because of the rules? Legal Aid reacts strongly to that, right?
They absolutely refute it. They call it fear-mongering. They say there's just no credible evidence backing that claim up.
Mm-hmm.
They argue the governor is using cherry-picked anecdotes, probably stemming from situations where, again, they allege the NYPD didn't comply. And there is another important point, that rolling back the law ignores that some domestic violence survivors actually end up facing criminal charges themselves, and they need access to evidence against their abusers for their own defense. Weakening discovery could hurt them, too.
So for them, the problem isn't the law itself, but issues with implementation, maybe funding, and particularly this alleged police noncompliance.
That sums it up well. Focus on fixing compliance and funding, not gutting the law. And the NYC Bar Association's analysis really echoes a lot of this.
So.
They emphasize that before 2019, New York's discovery access was, frankly, way behind almost every other state. They see CPL 245 as a necessary fix, needed for constitutional protections, and just better truth-seeking overall.
Does the NYC Bar also tackle that claim about a huge spike in felony dismissals caused by CPL 245?
Yes, they challenge that directly. They argue it's misleading. They point to data showing only minimal increases in speedy trial dismissals for felonies in the higher courts since the law changed. And they also stress that, importantly, overall crime rates have actually dropped across the state during this period, which they argue undermines claims that the discovery law is fueling a public safety crisis.
But what about the increase in dismissals for lower level stuff, misdemeanors?
Mm-hmm.
How does the Bar Association explain that?
Their take is that it's partly due to prosecutors having to make tough choices. With the increased workload across all cases, including serious felonies, they might deprioritize the lower level ones.
Resource allocation, basically.
Exactly. Resources get stretched, the speedy trial clock is ticking, so they focus on the felonies. As a result, the clock might run out on some misdemeanors. But, they argue, given falling crime rates overall, this doesn't automatically mean a bigger safety risk.
The Bar Association also seems worried about some proposed changes, like focusing only on evidence in the prosecutor's actual possession.
Yes, they're very concerned about that. They argue that shifting to actual possession could create a bad incentive, basically encouraging police not to share evidence with the DA.
Because if the DA doesn't physically have it, they don't have to disclose it.
Precisely. Which would completely undermine the whole point of the law, comprehensive disclosure from both police and prosecutors working together.
And they're also firm on keeping that link between discovery completion and trial readiness.
Absolutely. They argue the old standard, where the defense had to prove incurable prejudice from a violation, was just ineffective. Too high a bar.
So the current system, the certificate of compliance being needed to stop the clock, they see that as essential.
Yes, as a much more effective way to ensure discovery actually happens in practice.
And lastly, on the point about dismissals for minor technicalities, the bar's view.
They push back hard on that. looking at case decisions, they argue dismissals usually happen because prosecutors failed to meet basic fundamental evidence obligations, not trivial errors.
Like ignoring requests for months or withholding evidence?
That's what their analysis suggests, yeah. It's often more substantial than just a technicality.
Okay, so summing up the pro-reform side. They see the law as vital for fairness, long overdue, and believe the focus should be on making it work through funding and consistent compliance, not weakening it.
That captures it well. The NYC Bar strongly advocates for keeping CPL 245 and giving the system the resources it needs to function effectively.
All right, let's pivot now. The Manhattan Institute offers a starkly different picture. They talk about a deeply destabilizing effect.
Mm-hmm.
What are their main points?
Right. The Manhattan Institute paints a much more alarming picture. They call the reforms an extreme and far-reaching version that's created a staffing and functioning crisis in DA offices.
No, the crisis.
That's their term. They even mention Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg complaining about the Herculean efforts needed just to manage discovery under the current rules.
And they have stats on how often prosecutors are actually meeting these tight deadlines.
They do. Their data suggests statewide, prosecutors only met the deadlines in about 21% of cases, and even lower in NYC local courts, just 13%.
Wow, those are low numbers.
They definitely raise questions about practical feasibility, according to the Institute.
And the consequence, they argue, is lots of cases getting dismissed purely because of these procedural issues, not on the merits.
That's a core part of their argument, yes. Thousands of viable cases, they claim, dismissed simply because the compliance burden is too high and prosecutors run out of speedy trial time.
And they link this to data.
They point to jumps in dismissal rates NYC and statewide between 2019 and 2021. And interestingly, a drop in guilty pleas over the same period.
Suggesting defense attorneys think they can just wait for a dismissal.
That's the implication they draw, yes. Why plead guilty if you think the case might get tossed on discovery grounds anyway?
The report also talks about prosecutors leaving their jobs. Attrition. What's driving that, according to the Institute?
They pin it largely on the sheer volume of paperwork, what they call clerical drudgery, tied to the new discovery rules. Burnout among ADAs. They cite big losses in prosecutor numbers in Manhattan and Brooklyn from spring 2021 to spring 2022. And they say DAs across the state report recurred attrition and trouble filling spots.
Why? Just the paperwork.
They suggest it's a mix, low pay, long hours, and this added administrative weight making the job less appealing, less sustainable.
The Manhattan Institute also criticizes the scope of discovery, specifically the phrase related to the case. What's their issue there?
Their argument is that related to is just too broad, too vague compared to the traditional legal standard of relevant to. They believe it forces prosecutors to collect and sift through potentially huge amounts of material that might ultimately have nothing really relevant to do with the actual crime or the defense, which just adds massively to the workload.
And the speedy trial link makes this worse, in their view.
Yes, because the clock keeps running until they file that certificate of compliance. So, they argue, prosecutors run out of time while trying to gather all this potentially irrelevant related to stuff, result dismissals, even for minor offenses, just because time ran out on the paperwork chase.
They also seem particularly concerned about misdemeanors and lower-level offenses getting dismissed disproportionately.
They do. They argue that because DAs have to prioritize the big felony cases due to the discovery demands, the less serious cases are falling through the cracks.
Waiting.
Exponential jumps in dismissal rates for misdemeanors and violations, both in NYC and statewide. And again, a big drop in guilty pleas for these smaller offenses.
And does the Institute connect that trend to public safety concerns?
Yes, strongly. They argue these high dismissal rates for misdemeanors weaken the leverage for things like drug courts or treatment programs. It prevents a time out, as they put it, for repeat low-level offenders.
And could contribute to crime.
They suggest it could be a factor in rising crime in areas like shoplifting or transit offenses. They even speculate that massive cases like mass shootings might have to go federal because local DAs just can't handle the discovery volume under state law.
Wow. What about the cost? The financial side of that?
That's another major point for them. They call it a staggering financial burden. Costs for new tech, training, data storage, hiring more staff.
Huge investments.
Yes. They point to big budget hikes for DAs and other agencies in the city, plus state funds sent to counties specifically for discovery. They question if this money is actually leading to a better, more efficient justice system.
And finally, witness safety. That's a concern too.
a very significant one for the Manhattan Institute. They argue that forcing early sharing of witness info names, contacts, even grand jury testimony, puts witnesses at risk.
Especially in certain types of cases.
Particularly domestic violence and gang cases, they say. They feel protective orders, while available, often aren't enough to truly protect witnesses once their info is out there.
And this could discourage people from cooperating.
That's their fear, a chilling effect. They suggest it might even be linked to lower felony arrest rates and maybe rises in violent crime. They also mention friction between police and prosecutors now, with DAs pressuring police for records to meet discovery deadlines.
It's really something hearing these two sides. Such different takes on the same law's impact. It really underscores the complexity, doesn't it? Trying to balance the rights of the accused with public safety, with making the system actually work day to day.
Absolutely. And this whole debate, it's kind of democracy in action, right? We make a law, we see how it works, and then we discuss, evaluate, argue. Is it doing what we intended? Is it fair? Is it safe?
Yeah. And you're always going to have different players, prosecutors, defense lawyers, advocacy groups, the government, with different ideas about what fair and effective even mean.
Exactly. Everyone brings their own perspective, their own priorities. This discovery debate just throws those differences into really sharp relief.
And we see data being used heavily by both sides. Dismissal rates, crime stats, court reports.
Right. Data is crucial. But it's also clear how the interpretation of that data can differ wildly depending on your starting point, your viewpoint.
Which means we all need to look critically at the numbers, understand the context.
Definitely. And it always comes back to that central tension. Balancing individual rights against the community's need for safety. It's never easy.
And the legislative process itself is part of this. Laws get passed, then maybe amended later. Based on these debates and real-world experience, it's meant to be an ongoing cycle.
Exactly right. The fact that we're having this discussion, that changes are proposed, that people are advocating passionately, it's a normal, even healthy part of how our legal system is supposed to evolve in a democracy.
Well, this has been incredibly insightful, a real deep dive into a complex and, frankly, vital issue for New York. For our listeners who want to dig even deeper, we really recommend checking out the full reports from the Legal Aid Society, the Manhattan Institute, and the NYC Bar Association.
They're definitely worth reading if you want the full arguments. A quick search online should find them.
And maybe consider reaching out to your state representatives.
Yeah.
Share your perspective on discovery law changes. Informed civic engagement really matters in shaping these things.
It truly does.
And maybe just, you know, think about it. What does a fair and effective justice system look like to you? And how do rules like these discovery laws fit into that picture? It's a lot to consider.
Excellent points to ponder. Engaging with the sources, making your voice heard. That's participation.
So that was our deep dive into New York's criminal discovery laws. Clearly, strong feelings, lots of data on both sides, and this conversation is definitely not finished.
No, from it.
We really hope this gave you a better handle on the different angles of the debate and why it's so important for how justice works here in New York.
It really does show that ongoing effort to refine our system for everyone.
This deep dive was produced by the ever-diligent David Legear. Thanks so much for joining us for this Utica Phoenix deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
We look forward to exploring another important topic with you next time.